This is the Stephanie Miller Show. This is not Stephanie Miller. She has called in sick today. So we are waiting for John Fugelsang to arrive at the New York studios on his way from CNN. Until then, we got a great best of for you. So about a half an hour, John Fugelsang will be filling in.
And I will oppose any effort to return to the very same policies that brought on this economic crisis in the first place.
Woo! It's Happy Clappy Day!
Shut up!
Obama Apologist Day!
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
Yes.
Hump days with Hal Sparks?
Yes!
Oh, we're just in a little happy, clappy pile already.
Oh, indeed.
What? She gave us political speech last night. What was that all about?
That's using campaign funds to wear an American flag as
fair
a suit.
Shot.
Can I just say?
Commie claptrap.
President bitch slapped those bastards last night. I mean, that was sweet.
He was literally... He did such an end run around their normal talking point.
Yeah.
While basically going, well, I'm going to take that of yours and take that of yours and take that of yours.
Started with the troops. And then, like, it's stuff you can't really not applaud.
Right. And then I'm going to take your argument and reframe the word you use to mean something else so that you have, if you try to defend it in your response, you'll seem like you're defending my point, not the point attached to it.
You can tell when Boner starts to... kind of turn green, almost from his normal orange, that it's not going well.
I don't know if that means he's ripening. Does that mean he's finally ripening?
Yes.
It's like indigestion. It's a little like,
Because Boehner's one of those people, like, if he sat on your kitchen table for about a month, he'd get brown spots and be inedible, and you'd have to, at best, you could make maybe some bread out of him.
But he seriously, you can tell
some really nasty guacamole.
You can tell how good the speech is by the discomfort on his face and then how much more bitch face Eric Cantor gets, which each increasing camera shot.
I'm just going to bathe in Purell.
He's just doing lemon shots over in the corner.
I do not understand how the president would dare to act like we don't care about people just because we don't care about people.
By the way, the president, I mean, that's pretty much a hostile crowd he's talking in front of. Whereas Newt Gingrich apparently now, frankly, cannot talk or debate unless he's got in front of a bunch of Yahoo teabag crackers.
Applause,
frankly...
He's still Fred Thompson line.
Did you see that? Unless there's a bunch of racist crackers, I'm not going to debate anymore.
The king demands applause.
Yes, right.
Apparently, it threw him off without the racist crackers in front of him to hoot and holler.
That's exactly it. They need to. He's going to bring his own clappers at one point. The presidency for him, a Gingrich presidency, I think would include a laugh track and applause.
Yes, exactly.
I think he should just has a little guy that
if he wants applause, then he gets a laugh track too for his idiotic ideas, which is most of them.
Right. Don't you love how right both Newt and Mitt are? The other one, they both, can't we just agree you're both spectacularly awful? You are both, in your own special ways, the most spectacularly awful candidates ever.
Right. So well done.
Just whatever. Toss a coin. Whichever one he is, bring
Newt
it on.
Mitt 2012 or Mitt Newt or Moot Mitt. It doesn't matter.
You're both just awful.
Mute.
It sounds like a Russian word when you throw it in.
Mute. That's what it would be. It'd be Moot Gingney.
All right. And the reviews are already pouring in. Amy in Massachusetts, what'd you think, Amy?
Hi, Matt. Hi, Steph. Hi, Hal. How are you guys?
Good.
I was just so impressed with the president's speech last night. I was really happy that he mentioned manufacturing jobs at the beginning of the speech. It was something that I've been waiting to hear for so long. You know, when Newt gets up there, when Mitt gets up there, they say jobs, 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 but they don't give you a solution. They don't give you a way to bring back jobs. I was totally for Dennis Kucinich when he ran the last election, just because he was ready to get in there and reform NAFTA and get our jobs back. And I went with Barack Obama, and I love him, but I haven't heard this yet. I haven't heard such a passion for getting our manufacturing jobs back.
Well, and Amy, I got to say, you know, here's some fun facts. Since the last State of the Union, the economy has created 1.9 million private sector jobs, and private sector job creation under Obama in 2011 larger than 7 out of the 8 years that Bush was president. So
shut up.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And You know, when you do bring back manufacturing jobs, you also bring back office jobs. You bring, you know, you create, you're not such a throwaway society. We, you know, we're not going to be, if we create TVs, we're not going to be throwing them away after 3 years.
Yeah.
So we're protecting the environment. We're, you know, we're putting people back to work. We're, we're, you know, we're giving everybody jobs.
Amy, have you heard that? We got to grab that audio from the Laura Ingraham show that Mitt Romney was on, because I think he's losing it. Are you saying the economy's getting better? Well, yeah, it is. Yes. Because of things the president's done, yes.
Why do I have to run on
honestly,
it?
I thought Eric Cantor's head was going to explode. Like, I was standing there watching it, and he just looked like he was passing a kidney stone. I was like, you know, he looked like his head was going to explode.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You talk about fairness, and then you keep bringing up our record. Now, that's not fair.
That's not
how
fair.
Are we supposed to
how
run
that fairness?
If you keep bringing up our record? That doesn't
seriously,
make any sense.
Chris LeVoit, you have to find that audio. I don't know if you saw it on TV, but it was just like, yes, well, Laura, if you got a better idea.
I don't, wow.
He's like, you're going to run it on that? Really?
Yeah, that's your slogan? Okay.
Okay.
You're running against, all right.
Unless you've got a better idea. Mitt? Really?
Cordell in Kentucky. Hey, Cordell, welcome.
Good morning. Happy 2012, everybody.
Happy, happy time.
I want to say that, Stephanie, you are a queen. You're a goddess.
Excuse me?
How's my homeboy from Kentucky?
True. It is.
Yeah.
Chris LeVoy is a hunk. I don't care what anybody else says.
Yeah, no, well, listen, you don't want to know.
They also say that. You know what I mean? It's one of those, he's one of the few people, you know, I don't care what anybody says. Chris is a hunk. That's what everybody says.
Yeah, everyone says
that. Anybody who says differently, well, you know, yes. I got a can of whoop butt that I'm going to open.
See, I don't use the canned stuff.
Yeah,
I
it would be like you. It would be like if you started with, I don't care what anyone says, Steph, you're a drunken slut. Well, you see, it's not
well,
your original
says,
idea.
So,
yeah.
But did you guys enjoy the speech last night? I was on cloud nine. Now, I have a confession to make.
Yes.
But I told Rebecca, 6 months ago, I was very worried. I did not think that President Obama had a good chance of re-election because of all the insane voter suppression laws that, you know, Republican control houses around the country were passing. But after hearing the speech last night comparing our awesome military who gets things done, who uses teamwork, to a Congress that blocks everything he tries to do,
yep.
I was sold on him.
Yep.
I also liked the fact that he highlighted the tax code, and he mentioned the capital gains tax, and the first person that came to mind.
Well, yeah, and thank you, Mitt Romney, for giving us Exhibit A in income inequality.
And not to mention, I've always wanted to say this, noody-doop, noop-noop-noop.
All right. Cordell, see, that's why the official hostage negotiator of the Stephanie Miller Show, Hal Sparks, is here on Wednesdays. If we have to talk you liberals off the ledge, we will.
All right.
And can I get, you know, before I go, can I change my title? I am, as you know, the official screenwriter of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes.
Who is now employed. I'm very happy.
Yay!
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 I would like to be known as the official gay blast.
Blah.
Blah. Yes, blah man.
All right, and next time you get nervous, that's why Hal Sparks will be here with the bullhorn to talk you down off the ledge.
All right.
Oh, I will keep that in mind. You guys have a great day.
Let yourself be talked down. Just hush for a minute.
Look, I know you're feeling nervous. I know you're feeling nervous. And 6 months ago was a long time in political time, but I know it's not a good time while you're up on a ledge to say this, but... I told you so. There you go.
All right, thank you. Goodbye, Cleo. All right. All that clunking around was me getting the prop, for God's sakes. Let us do our skit. I don't know why people just listen when you're on the megaphone.
Let me just play some clips from the State of the Union address. If I play any of the Republican response, you might fall off the ledge just from laughing.
Yes.
Then you'll double over and fall. So,
yes.
Yeah.
All right. Calm down. Everybody listen. Here we go. The president last night. Here we go.
We can either settle for a country where a shrinking number of people do really well, while a growing number of Americans barely get by. Or we can restore an economy where everyone gets a fair shot, and everyone does their fair share, and everyone plays by the same set of rules.
Mitt.
Shut up.
Mitt.
Yeah, Mitt.
You know, it's interesting to me that there's these complaints about the president that he's turning us into Europe. you know, or a European socialist. Yeah.
Okay.
And it is the Republicans that have turned the Congress and the Senate into Parliament, because this, it used to just be clapping and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Until this particular crowd of Republicans came in, they started yelling liar and that kind of stuff. But now they start, and literally you're turning us, the Republicans are turning us into British Parliament.
Oh, and now it's gotten even worse. The guy from Colorado didn't even show up to give this president, you know, the office of the presidency, the respect of showing up. The guy from Colorado that called the president a tar baby. So he was probably yelling tar baby at the TV at home.
No
so
doubt.
So at least, you know.
Well, something worse.
Yeah. Robert in Albuquerque, where Hal Sparks and I will be March 31st for
Look
Sexy
at that. What are the odds? Who knew that?
Hello, Robert.
I am so there. I am so there.
Awesome.
I tell you what, our president just stepped up yesterday and took it to another level. He, you know, he basically told Congress, you know what, we're going to get this done, you know, with or without you. And you know, and there's three things you can do. You can lead, follow, or get out of the way. And he basically told them to get out of the way. And,
right.
Yep.
And old bitch face Cantor got bitch slapped.
Ugh. Yeah. He got an even bigger bitch
face. He's turning into Ed Grimley. This is just the worst, I must say.
I must say, this is awkward.
This is the worst program ever. And yet, maybe it is. Who am I to say? I could be the one to say it. And yet, why would I? And yet, here I am again.
And yet, here I am, old bitch face.
And yet, no one wants to listen to me, and perhaps they're right, you know.
I'm like a pimple that's about to pop.
Right.
18 minutes after the hour, back with more crunchy audio, State of the Union goodness, and Hal Sparks. What's yummier than that? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, I like it. I like it a lot.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
We were just saying, God bless all our unpaid Cub producers. Julie from Seattle has sent the Mitt Romney on Laura Ingraham audio. We will get to that.
Oh, wow.
And also, God bless Mike and Raleigh, who canceled all of his plans, which is what Mama expects of you. To the horrible Scott Walker anthem that's on YouTube. He did a Stephanie Miller version with live singers.
Wow.
That we will get to.
He has a budget to hire singers, no less.
Quickly. On all the cash I pay him. Mm-hmm. All right, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Let's go to Lavender Pitt, the official roller derby queen of the Stephanie Miller Show in Tucson. Hello, Lavender.
Morning, Mama. Morning, Luke.
We love you.
Hello.
You have the exact same delivery every time.
And the royal we loves you as well.
All right, then.
But the royal we also has a little bit of a tingle up her leg to think that the president is no longer pretending there are Republican grown-ups in the room.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I think it was one of your favorite parts of the show, of the speech.
The show.
It was because I felt like it was a sitcom where he was like, he was doing all setups and they were the punchline.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was,
you know, it gave my heart a warm little flutter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say, there was there's like 9 points where they were like, well, we're going to get him with our response. Oh, he took that.
Oh, damn.
He took it away.
What's really fun about that is
somebody needs to call that dude.
I'm going to be using the text of the speech to discuss persuasive writing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he warned Republicans that he will fight them if they try to obstruct him or restore an economy gutted by outsourcing, bad debt, and phony financial profits. I mean, he nailed it.
He covered ethos, pathos, and logos.
Thank you, Lavender.
And souvlaki.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of that, too. And this is the previous caller was talking about manufacturing jobs.
An economy built on American manufacturing, American energy, skills for American workers.
Yeah, so?
And a renewal of American values.
Shut up. That's the Republican response, basically.
Yeah. The Republican response is basically, nuh-uh.
Shut up, dude.
Nuh-uh.
You're blowing it for us.
Jill in Madison. Hi, Jill.
Hi,
go ahead.
Gosh, there's so much I could say. I love the speech. Of course, I don't agree with everything. He does talk about, he didn't say fracking. But, you know, I understand, he's got to get money like everybody else, to campaign.
Right.
But, you know, what really, sometimes when I look at him and I just see, like, you know, everyone hating on him, you know, the Republicans hating on him. People are so angry. And having Gabby Giffords there last night was, you know, was really a testament to that. And I'm married to a Mexican. I have two kids who are half Mexican. And, you know, it's just, I'm tired of the hatred in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, compare and contrast that to Mitt Romney in that ridiculous debate Monday night. What is he talking about, self-deportation? What was that?
If he's elected, I'm going to self-deport.
All right, thank you,
You know
Jill.
What the fascinating part of his thing, and, you know, and he flip-flops, so we're not surprised that he talks out of both sides of his mouth all the time, but he's literally, in all of his speeches, I want to make America the greatest country in the world that no one wants to come to.
Yeah,
it's basically his his immigration plan is make this place suck. And then, but with American
question.
Exceptionalism.
Because the president, he did, I believe he did touch on the Dream Act, right?
Yeah.
Last night. And it just contrasts that with the question was, Governor Romney, is the one thing I'm confused about. You say you don't want to go and round up people and deport them, but you also say they would have to go back to their home countries and then apply for citizenship. So if you don't deport them, how do you send them home? Well, Romney says, the answer is self-deportation.
What?
Right. Yeah.
Which is people decide they can do better by going home.
Well,
because they can't find work here because they don't have legal documentation. Well,
By turning this country into Mexico, it gives them no reason to come in.
If you don't like me, it'll be so bad, it'll be a mass exodus to Mexico.
If they want all the money concentrated in a few hands, no environmental laws.
Go to Guatemala. You can go to almost any country.
Yeah, I mean, in his, how beautiful is it, Al, that his tax returns are released right before the State of the Union? This is making the case when he keeps talking about, they envy success. No, I say bully on you for how much money you made. It's that you didn't pay your fair share. Well, you've got it parked in the Cayman Islands Switzerland.
His whole big thing is I paid 15%.
13.
He paid 13.
Yeah.
But he was saying I probably pay about 15. He was overestimating.
Yeah.
It's about 15.
Yeah, and as you were saying yesterday, Jimmy, first of all, what's all this thing about, you can't, the job creators? He didn't create one job. He didn't make one thing.
He exported a bunch
of them. Yes, exactly. But my point is that and he's not paying nearly, what middle-class families are paying.
Well, the ironic part is that, you know, he wants to say that all the stuff that Bain Capital did for, with Staples and the companies that did survive has something to do with him. He's like Victor the Cleaner and LaFemme Nikita. They didn't call him in when a company was doing well and needed a boost to go better. They called in Mitt Romney with a doctor bag.
To clean the brains off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and thus the term vulture capital.
Yeah, he was like the tooth puller in Marathon Man.
Mr. Romney.
Is it safe?
You just hear flapping pterodactyl wings.
Why don't you try acting?
Dear boy.
All right, 29 minutes after the hour. The rockin' congresswoman from the great state of Illinois, Representative Jan Schakowsky, next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She's a little bit older and very gentle.
She's blind in one eye.
Well, maybe I can just let her ride me.
Oh, maybe she's blind in one eye because she caught Jim Ward's
exploding eyeball disease. Yes.
But this is the Stephanie Miller Show, already in progress. I am John Fugelsang. I'll be filling in for Steph all morning long, along with the Mooks.
Hi there.
Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. And Jim just walked in the door. So we have Jim and all is right with the world except for Stephanie.
Right on. So it's a Y chromosome testosterone fest on the Stephanie Miller Show this morning. That means, ladies, we need y'all to call in and raise the estrogen level just a bit at 1-800-STEP-12. There is, oh my God, of all the day, of all the weeks for you to call me in last minute every single day of the week, Chris?
I know,
This is the best possible week. There is so much going on right now between Mitt Romney and what he said on Soledad's show yesterday. And I just came from doing 2 hours on Soledad O'Brien.
Yeah.
And that girl's ego needs to be inflated a little bit more after that. Good Lord. I castigated her for capturing Mitt Romney with one of those gotcha direct quotes.
I
don't give a rat's ass about the very poor.
Yeah. In fact, we have that soundbite from yesterday's Soledad O'Brien show. Hold on.
Can we play it?
Yeah, here we go.
I'm in this race because I care about Americans. I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there. If it needs repair, I'll fix it.
They're not Americans, apparently.
Yes. Now, Mitt chastised her for when she brought up that comment again and said she was taking it out of context. He also said he wasn't worried about the very rich either. What a guy.
Oh, well,
so if you're just tuning in to Planet Earth, if you're waking up from a coma, the very, very poor and the very, very rich, they're all doing just fine.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. People below the poverty line, they have a safety net, so no worries at all. Now, this is disgusting for a lot of reasons. First off, Mitt Romney is one of these guys who I love because he's going to use Jesus like a Frisbee and throw him all over the place and use his faith while also saying, I don't really care about the very, very poor. It's been amazing to see both Gingrich and Limbaugh go after Mitt Romney over this. Gingrich on the grounds of you're not compassionate, you don't care, because Gingrich is a bleeding liberal. And Limbaugh, who doesn't like the fact that we even have a safety net to begin with, and who doesn't want to think that Mitt's going to expand it to the middle class. The most disgusting thing about this, and Jim and Chris, tell me your thoughts on this. Of all the disgusting elements of this, and my God, I am just loving Mitt Romney trying to pretend to be a normal person, is that he said this clearly to pander for middle-class votes.
Yep.
He said this, I don't care about the rich, I don't care about the poor, I just care about all y'all in the middle.
Right. I'm your guy.
Yeah, so what's the most disgusting to me, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm unfair, let us know at 1-800-STEPH-1-2, I feel like Mitt Romney is assuming that the middle class is indifferent to the suffering of the poor. And he thinks that this is a very, very good argument to make, that I'm just going to come out here and tell them I don't care about the poor, because they don't. I happen to believe that Americans are a bit kinder than that. Americans don't necessarily agree on what to do to help the poor, or whether we should help the poor,
right.
But I do think Americans care. And I do think that it's going to backfire on Mitt, at least I hope it will, that he'll just assume that the middle class is callous and will respond to a guy who says he doesn't care about the very poor in America.
Even Rush Limbaugh took Mitt Romney to task yesterday on his show. We'll be having that soundbite coming up after the top of the hour with Carl Frisch in Right Wing World. But he took Mitt Romney to task. He says that's what people stereotypically think of Republicans as. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to be doing this.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Rush also criticized him for invoking a safety net and saying the safety net was a good thing.
Right.
Because we all know plenty of our Republican brothers and sisters, not all of you, but lots of Republicans would love to do away with the safety net entirely and live in the Ron Paul libertarian Somalia fantasy land where charity takes care of all the things government's not good enough to do.
Yeah. I think we can all agree that Mitt Romney's a robot, though. I think that's one unifying.
Yeah.
Do you think? I don't know. I think that's a bit insulting to cyborg technology.
Yeah.
Cyborg Americans all over the country are up in arms.
It is, you're right, Jim. I mean, you know, I like to say about Mitt Romney, I watch all these debates, and if I could be that stiff for 90 minutes, I would do gay porn. But the thing is, he does have this automaton thing, and it's going to be interesting seeing how his handlers try to control him. Now, keep in mind, there is no one, except for Barack Obama, and even more than Barack Obama, there's no one who's more prepared to run for president than Mitt Romney. He's been doing it now for, what, 5 years, 6 years? He's been prepping. He's been raising money. I think he's a monster at debates. He's fantastic. I'm so impressed at Romney the debater this year as opposed to 2008. But every time he opens up his mouth, you get these little... It's not that he's rich. No one cares that he's rich. God bless you. We all love plenty of rich guys, you know, and they're going to try and say it's class warfare. Because really what they do is anytime someone goes on Fox News and tells you that anything against billionaires is class warfare, that's class warfare.
Yeah, exactly. Class warfare is from the top down.
Yeah, and you know, I talked about this on the air this morning. You know why Fawlty Towers, the British show with John Cleese, never worked here? Yeah, it never worked in America. They couldn't do it because in England, it's all about class. Mm-hmm. It's all about the class struggle. We all know it over there. In America, we like to pretend we have no class struggle. And if you ever acknowledge we have a class struggle, you get accused of engaging in class warfare. And every time Mittens has come out and tried to seem like a regular guy, let's recount a few of those, shall we? When he came out last year and said, I'm unemployed, my friends.
He's never been wanting for money, ever.
The year Mitt Romney said he was unemployed, my friends, he made over $20 million, paid 13.9% tax on it.
Passive income.
In passive income, without working. He wasn't working. He just made it off of money in the bank and investments.
Actually, it's sort of passive-aggressive income.
Tell job I got the money, which was a great quote, coming out and saying, I like firing people, my friends. I like being able to fire people. And we know this is a guy who outsourced plenty of jobs. When Mitt Romney brags about all the jobs he created, he doesn't actually come out and say that a lot of them were in Asia.
Asia, yep.
We loved when Mitt Romney came out and casually bet Rick Perry $10,000 in Iowa.
$10,000 bet, my friend.
Incredible. In a state where the median income is 26 grand, he's like throwing around $10,000 bets on stage. I mean, really, GOP? This is really the guy you want to pour money into the PAC for? Mitt Romney is going to teach America and conservative America more about the upper 1% than Occupy Wall Street could on their best day.
Yeah.
I'm not tone deaf, my friends.
And, you know.
Oh, say, can you save on those early loans?
Now, white boy carried a tune. Let's
he was flat. He was
about a quarter tone flat.
He carried a tune. The rhythm, no, but he stayed on key.
The rhythm is going to get you.
Yeah, it got him.
The rhythm is going to get you.
Well, and also Mitt Romney was the head of Bain Capital, and Bain Capital took over stores like Staples and Sports Authority. Have you been into either one of those stores lately? It's kind of a soul-sucking experience. Mm. I'm just afraid that America will become a soul-sucking experience if Mitt Romney...
Try walking into a Walmart.
It's a fair argument to make. And, you know, not to take anything away from Staples and all the folks that they employ and all the great products they sell. Mm. But, again, Mitt Romney's essential argument is he wants to do exactly what George Bush did and call it something different. Mitt Romney is a guy who made $20 million for not working last year and paid less in taxes than the middle class did, and he's running asking working class Republicans to vote for him so he can give himself another tax cut.
Yeah.
And that's the argument. So when we argue with our Republican coworkers and our neighbors and our relatives, you know, it's not that Romney's a bad guy. I refuse to believe he is. I think he has a good heart. He seems to love his wife. He's raised some fine sons. I don't really respect the way he treats the family pet, Mutt Romney. It's not like we're talking about the incubus like Newt Gingrich, okay? Like, you don't smell sulfur when he enters the room like Newt Gingrich. Dante couldn't even imagine Gingrich as a character in The Inferno.
Maybe he's more like the Entity with Barbara Hershey. That keeps coming up on this show. Yeah. I don't know if you've been here for those discussions.
Oh, John. My God. We're dating ourselves so much, the Pope would be offended. But here's the thing. Mitt Romney's going to keep on coming out and saying these tone-deaf things, and this is the key to getting our conservative brothers and sisters, who, let's face it, don't like Romney anyway. My Republican cousins can't stand the guy. They're going to hold their nose and vote for him. But this is, it's got to be extended to the entire Republican Party. Just as Obama and Howard Dean, as head of DNC, brilliantly linked the entire GOP to Bush in 2008, we have got to show folks that the entire GOP agenda is indistinguishable on Popeye from Mitt Romney. And this is exactly, it's exactly how he talks. So when he scolded Soledad yesterday for taking his comment out of context, she didn't. He actually said, I'm not worried about the very poor. I think most of us are, and I think lots of conservatives are very worried about the very poor. And I don't think we'd like to hear that kind of callous disregard or an assumption that we share that kind of callous disregard. So it's beat up on midday because we're stuck with him as a nominee, folks. Yeah. Get used to it. And as the conservatives have to get used to it, so too do liberal comedians.
Exactly.
And he makes it plenty easy. Yeah. In Gingrich news, can I just talk for a second about this Obama's anti-religion?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. On the day of the National Prayer Breakfast, we're sure to hear more of this. Now, Newt is coming out and trying to accuse the president of being anti-Catholic. Why? Because the new provision that our government has given us that insurance plans have to cover contraception for women, which to me is just common sense times 10. You know, I like to say we don't have an abortion problem in this country. We have an abortion symptom.
Yeah.
The problem is unwanted pregnancy. Abortion's the symptom.
Yep.
When you can get all the cardinals and all the popes and all the priests and all the conservatives and liberals together and say, hey, what are we as a people going to do to stop the plague of unwanted pregnancy, then the abortion debate becomes irrelevant. It becomes, as Bill Clinton said, safe, legal, and rare. Keep it that way.
Right. But Catholics don't even want to provide contraception in order to prevent the unwanted pregnancies. That's the problem I have.
I disagree. Conservative Catholics don't. But the overwhelming
majority...
They are the loud ones, and they tend to be the ones with control, because the Catholic Church runs like the Bush administration. They reward loyalty, not original thinking. We're going to see this happen more and more, but the majority of American Catholics use birth control, okay?
Yeah.
They may talk a good game, but they use birth control.
Yep.
And I am so sick and tired, as a person who was raised Christian in this country, of this mentality that birth control is an insult to God, that in some way not letting people use birth control is an insult to God. And it all comes from a Bible story, the story of Onan, which is also used to say that masturbation is a sin, and maybe later on we'll have some story time and I'll discuss that, because it really is outrageous.
Masturbation story time?
Will there be a slideshow?
Yes, what if there is? What if there is? But you can't use the Bible to say that
maybe birth I've been doing it wrong. I don't know.
If God isn't mad at you, you've been doing it wrong.
If God's not mad at you, you're doing it all wrong. I make the point that you can't use the Bible to say that masturbation is a sin, but I also say you can't use the Bible to say that birth control is a sin. I would invite any of our conservative listeners or trolls, and I know y'all are out there, to call me up and agree or disagree on this, because I think this is an area where President Obama can get a lot of conservatives on his side. Most Americans think birth control is a good idea. Mother Teresa going to starving Calcuttans and telling them that their poverty was a gift from God and they could never use any birth control because that would be an insult to God. You know, to me, it's insane. This mentality, you can't be devout unless you're pumping them out. And
do you think it was originally a business decision on the part of the Pope?
Completely. You want to have as many babies as possible, and it's tied into the reason
why Catholic babies can tithe to the church.
Exactly, and it's one of the reasons why the Catholic Church is becoming a second or third world religion. But here's the thing. They always say, well, God said be fruitful and multiply. God said be fruitful and multiply. And if you want to take the Bible as absolute literal fact, fine. When God said literally to Adam and Eve, the only two people on earth, be fruitful and multiply, there were two people. Now there's 7 billion. Mission accomplished. So you got to show me anything from the Bible, or let's be better than that, anything from Jesus that says that family planning's a sin. It's not. This is Newt Gingrich dividing people. This is Newt Gingrich trying to divide spiritual people from the president, and trying to divide spiritual people because, again, the majority of Christians, the majority of Catholics in America support birth control, and it's a great thing. And if Obama's administration is smart, if they're smart, we'll see David Plouffe take a break from sending us all 500 emails a day and run with this, because this is an area where they can really, really reach people.
I wish Gingrich's mother had practiced birth control, but that's just me.
Well, I'm honored to be here. I'm John Fugelsang, along with Jim and Chris. We have some great guests. Carl Frisch is going to be here today. Greg Palast is going to be here today. And Representative Henry Cuellar from the great state of Texas is going to be here today. Our number is 1-800-STEPH12.
You're a rock star, Stephanie. You're the best. There's nobody better at all liberal, left-wing, crazy, lunatic, fringe talk than you.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Nobody but
Stephanie Miller.
And me.
That would be the great Barry White, and we're playing him in honor of the great Don Cornelius, TV revolutionary, the man who gave us Soul Train for 35 years, from 71 to 2006, the first show of its kind, the first TV show to take African-American music and put it on TV in a fun way that brought it to white folks and made little lame white kids like me that much more hip.
You just sounded like a VH1 VJ right there.
Well, you know what? I kind of was.
Yeah, you were.
When it was run by people who could spell the word music, but I got to say...
Or spell the word VH1.
Oh, tell me about it. I mean, I really... You know, but the hard thing when I was at VH1, you know, they hired me to be their comedian guy, and then I wound up being their de facto classic rock guy, which was fun. It was like, you know, broadcasting grad school, but the hard thing was people love music, they love TV, they don't love music on TV, and you know, we would never get ratings. We would have Eric Clapton and Dr. John doing a duet special live, and it got no ratings. They put a 10-year-old Gallagher rerun on, and everybody would watch that, so... It's plenty painful, but it's guys like Don Cornelius, you know, along with like guys like Dick Clark, of course, who brought music and television together and made it work for a long time. And I would say that Don Cornelius and Starbucks have done more to bring good music to lame white people than anyone else.
Remember that time you interviewed Paul McCartney?
That was awesome.
Oh, I know. Someday I'll be able to tell all my Paul McCartney stories.
There's some stories he probably doesn't want you telling.
Let's just say Paul McCartney's a lot more interesting than you'd ever know from his interviews. And I mean that in a very positive way.
Wow. He's
an awesome guy. Yeah. I had some great times working
with him. I created Cold Fusion, you know.
Is he a normal, despite all of his immense fame and wealth, is he a normal guy?
That's the amazing thing about Paul, because when I was at VH1, I got to work with George, and I got to, I met Springsteen and Pete Townsend and Willie Nelson, and I really, Robbie Robertson, people that meant so much to me in rock.
Mm-hmm, cool.
McCartney is unlike anyone I've ever met in that he has his charisma is turned up to 12.
Right.
I mean, he walks in the room and you know it. And it's not just that everyone knows it's him. He carries this thing about him. And you see it on stage, too. I mean, it's easy to trash McCartney, and people like to pick on Paul McCartney until they see him live and they realize, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, yep. This man is so talented, I just want to cry forever. But he's also, Paul McCartney is a guy who I've never seen an interview where it captured what he's like off camera. Because he's always a little, got the Paul McCartney thing, love, and doing that. And, I mean, like, I sat, drinking gin and tonics, talking Canterbury Tales with this guy for half an hour around New York City.
Oh, my God, really?
I got to hang out with him and his kids in London once backstage. He drives himself, by the way, to all his own appearances. He came to our show and just drove himself there and back. Back when Linda was sick was when I first met him. And he's so normal, but he's such a great performer. And you know what? It's taking regular people who also happen to be incredible performers and mashing that together that made the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show the greatest tour of 2011 and the greatest segue in all time. Well, I could talk about McCartney all day.
Yeah.
And I do want to also say he has a new album out called Kisses on the Bottom, which is a line from the song Sit Right Down and Write Myself a Letter.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, man, McCartney's got two great records in a row. His last record was as the Fireman, this band he does.
Mm-hmm.
That he doesn't use his name, but this, it's called Kisses on the Bottom, and they were selling it as like McCartney doing a standards album. Like I thought, it's some ghastly Rod Stewart thing with a big band, and it's not. It's Paul McCartney with Diana Krall and her band jazz songs, lo-fi jazz songs. It's the first album McCartney's done where he doesn't play any instruments, he just sings. Clapton plays acoustic guitar in a few songs. Diana Krall plays piano. And of course, Paul wrote some great songs with Elvis Costello in the 80s.
Right.
He's married to Diana Krall, so it's pretty cool in that way. And McCartney sings it all in his higher register. And it's the first time he's done an album where he sounds like an old man, which is incredible. His voice sounds a lot older, and that's the only instrument he uses. And I've never liked him as a singer more. It's dynamite. It's not. There's no big singles on it. He's written two original songs that are incredible, and it's really one of the best records I've heard in years. I can't recommend it highly enough. The new Leonard Cohen's great too, but check out McCartney. It's called Kisses on the Bottom. I think it comes out next week, and it'll put hair in your chest.
But is it as good as the new Stephanie Miller physical CD?
I'm so
glad
we're talking
promo.
CDs.
The comedy album that has topped the charts. From iTunes to Amazon.com and even Billboard Magazine. Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour Volume 1 has broken records and shattered Republican memes. What once was only digital is finally getting physical. Now, for the first time, you can experience Stephanie and her sexy liberal gang on CD, featuring the talents of John Pugelsang.
Blaming this recession on Obama is like blaming your hangover on the guy making breakfast, okay?
Hal Sparks.
The right side of the Senate must have just sounded like popcorn. To the heads exploding. What science and a victory and a terror is a front.
And progressive radio superstar Stephanie Miller.
You know what? It's getting too mean at those Republican debates, isn't it? That's why Chris Christie didn't get in, because it's already Lord of the Flies that somebody would have killed the fat kid with a rock.
Go to sexyliberal.com or stephaniemiller.com to own the album that chronicles progressive comedy history. Now available on CD.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so when we come back, we will be taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12, but I'm so thrilled we finally have a physical material CD, and we'll be selling that at the big Sexy Liberal Show on Saturday night in Philly. Lots more coming up, kids. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Well, I'm walking on sunshine. Well,
Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from New York and L.A. I'm John Fuglesang, filling in for Renee and Steph, along with Emmy Award winner Jim Ward and the great and brilliant Chris Lavoie in the L.A. studio.
Who has won no awards.
And Paul McCartney's here as well.
Hello, Paul.
We'll talk about Paul. Last half hour, really.
If you're going to do your Paul voice, I'll do my George voice from the early.
Oh, boy.
I'm quite prepared for that eventuality.
Now that all the listeners have left, I want to wish everyone out there a very happy Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, of course, is a very important day for people who don't believe climate science, but do trust involuntary rodent weather forecasts.
Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry. And apparently he saw, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, so 6 more weeks of whatever winter you've been having.
Six more weeks of very mild, scary Al Gore warned us winter.
I told you.
But then Staten Island Chuck, who's now he's got competition Island Chuck.
No.
Yeah, he was trending on Twitter today. Staten Island Chuck, that's the guy that runs the ferry, I think.
What is he? Does he wear
Tony Phil's a jerk.
Yeah, does he wear gold chains and gel in his hair?
He drives an IROC. What is it to you? Staten Island Chuck is right now trending nationwide, and Staten Island Chuck, I believe, did see his shadow, which proves that when the aliens come, I don't want to be the Homo sapien who has to explain Groundhog Day to these people. They made over $1 million for Punxsutawney Phil over the weekend from just hotels and people coming in to watch this terrified rat being held up in front of thousands of bored humans. So, really, you know, let's hope God's got a sense of humor. And speaking of senses of humor, I'm very excited.
Carl.
Carl for exciting. Bullfightstrategies.com.
Who's Mia?
What?
So inviting to Mia?
Oh. Hey,
welcome
Carl
to the show. Carl Frisch of Bullfight Strategies. Good morning.
So that's when he poisoned her food. Hey, John, I was just talking about you.
There's been a lot of that floating around this week. Hello, yeah. Carl. Welcome to a pretty busy news week for you, I would imagine. It's been pretty fun.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, especially with Mitt Romney putting his foot in his mouth on Soledad O'Brien yesterday.
I don't care about poor people.
Yeah, that was my favorite Jesus quote. Oh, no, wait, Jesus didn't say that. Mitt Romney did. Jesus said the opposite.
Well, you know, I've always said, John, people like Mitt Romney, you know, when they think of the parable, you know, it's harder for a rich person to enter the gates of heaven than it is for them to, you know, pass through the eye of a needle.
A camel.
Or a camel, rather. I always say that Mitt Romney and his folks are just waiting for Wall Street to build a bigger needle.
Exactly, and he's got the super PAC to fund it too.
Yeah,
and it's pretty amazing, Carl. I never thought I'd see so many liberals rooting for Newt Gingrich, the little guy.
Little?
Oh, you know what it is? Is we remember the '90s and what a major prick he was throughout the 1990s, and now the Republican Party is getting to know exactly what that was like. So
yeah, it's like all the worst parts of Republican Party are eating each other now. It's rather strange seeing that the super PACs are destroying Gingrich and Gingrich is destroying the party. And it's interesting because we've heard new
cannibalism.
Yeah.
Well, it's delightful. It would take a bit longer for Newt, but it's interesting seeing how Newt Gingrich is attacking Mitt Romney in sort of a neo-Dickensian way of not caring about the poor, whereas America's sweetheart, Rush Limbaugh, the man who really controls the party, he didn't like what Mitt Romney said, but for a very different reason. Do we have Cut 11, Chris?
Yeah.
But I even have a problem with this in context. I'm not worried about the poor. We got a safety. The safety net is one of the biggest cultural problems we've got. We had better be worried about it, just like we had better get angry over Obamacare. Obamacare is worth getting mad about. Mitt said that it wasn't. This business, I'm not worried about the very poor. We got a safety net there. Right. The safety net is contributing to the destruction of their humanity and their futures.
Mm-hmm. So if you're just tuning in, having a subsistence living to help the poor so they don't turn to crime or desperation or suicide is bad for society. Carl, your thoughts on Rush?
Don't get down on Rush. I mean, he's just upset that he's never seen a net that could hold him.
It's just incredible. It's incredible that Mitt Romney is coming off as the bleeding heart liberal compared to Rush Limbaugh.
Well, but this is a problem for Mitt Romney. I mean, every week there's another gaffe that makes him look either robotic, heartless, or like the duck Scrooge, who when he returns home opens
Scrooge
up the door and jumps into a pit of gold coins.
Mm-hmm. We were discussing that earlier on the show. Yeah.
Whether it's a $10,000 bet in the debate, whether it's saying I'm the middle class too, folks, or any of those
I'm
things.
Unemployed, or just as we learned last week that the guy made over $20 million, only paid 13.9% in his taxes on it, and that was all for not working, and now he's asking conservative folks to
right
give him
now,
a tax cut.
In the time that this show has been on today, he has made the median family income. Of the year for a year in the 1 hour that the show has been on today.
Exactly.
It's and I'm not going to begrudge his wealth, but
no, not at all.
Have policies that are reflective of A, how appreciative you are that this country has enabled you to do so well and not gotten in the way and not taxed you fairly, and B, show that you have compassion for people that don't have the means that you have.
Exactly.
And he has neither of those two things going for him.
Well, and to be fair to Mitt, he did try to correct Soledad and say, I also said I didn't care about the very wealthy either, which actually isn't true. He's fighting for the very wealthy to pay even lower taxes, and he's equating the very poor with the very wealthy, all in a cynical attempt to go for the middle-class vote and assuming that they are as callously full of disregard for the poor as he is.
I wish I knew what he considered the super wealthy, because there's only 8,000 Americans who make more money than him.
Really?
Can you imagine that? He's been to rallies. I've been to Obama rallies that have more people than there are wealthier than him in this country. Mm-hmm. There are 360 million Americans, and there are only 8,000 of them that are wealthier than him.
It's incredible.
That's
and
amazing.
What's amazing, too, to me is that now after Bill Gates' announcement last week, we now have the richest man, the second richest man in the world, who wants the rich to pay more in taxes and thinks that's just common sense. The third richest, of course, is Mr. Buffett, who thinks that the rich should pay more in taxes. It just makes more sense. It worked under Eisenhower. It worked under Clinton. We're not talking about gouging them. We're talking about making them just slightly less super rich. And the richest man in the world, well, he's Mexican, so he doesn't care.
That's true.
Right.
I mean, this is through the looking glass. But I do want to play a clip from the guy who's around to make Rush Limbaugh look dignified, Sean Hannity. I want your thoughts on this one, Carl. Here's Hannity on track 12.
I have a responsibility in my life to take care of my business, and that means I've got to pay my bills. And I am not going to change my mindset. I don't want a thing from the government. Nothing. I wish I could pull out of Social Security today. I don't want. I would never want to be on a government housing program. I would never want to be dependent on food stamps. And the thing we've got to deal with more than anything else in this country is deal with this entitlement mindset. The government's going to help me in every aspect of my life.
Oh, so you're giving up your salary then, huh?
You know what? Most people on food stamps don't want to be on food stamps, Sean. Mm-hmm.
They're just lazy, that's all.
And anyone whose life is hard enough, they're on... Anyone whose life is tough enough, they're on food stamps, knows damn well the government's not going to be able to help them out of their hole.
Well,
they know it better than anyone.
That's perfectly fine from the government. I mean, he can stop taking roads. And you know what? Power is his show. It's electricity, which gets to his building that houses his studio.
Yeah, get off the grid, Hannity.
By the government. So I'm perfectly fine with taking him off the air.
Yeah, and Hannity, don't use the airwaves that are owned by the public and therefore owned by the government.
Exactly. And you know what? I'm so sick of these people using the word entitlements. You know, well, of course, it's an entitlement. They paid into it, and it works, and the system works. But you'll never hear these guys talking about corporate welfare. You'll never hear them talking about paying hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies to oil companies that pay no federal taxes to begin with. You'll never hear any outrage about how the wealthy and the corporations...
They're job creators, John. They're job creators.
Yeah, in Asia.
Which is, of course, baloney. I mean, they're more like jobster baiters, if they're anything.
Brilliant.
It's a kind of job.
Well, yeah, and you know, it is all about trying to demonize the president and progressives as much as possible. Do we have the Stuart Varney quote about the Coke? Go ahead, Carl.
It's a perpetuation of class warfare, and what's funny is that the second we protest, the second we say anything about income inequality, it's we're the perpetrators of class warfare every day. The right wing in this country perpetuates class warfare.
Yep.
And it's only when we stand up that they ever talk about class warfare. You know, if we didn't stand up, we'd be in the middle of class genocide.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, well, exactly right. It's only called class warfare when you fight back. Can we play this clip of Stuart Varney on Fox News?
I call this a disturbing tactic that's emerging in the president's re-election campaign. It is a campaign of intimidation, bullying, and demonizing private sector individuals because of their political views and their opposition to the president's political policies. For example, the Koch brothers feel that they're being singled out and that you are actually stretching the boundaries of the legitimate use of government power. The president's re-election campaign calls the Koch brothers secretive, that they're pulling strings behind the scenes, that they're playing fast and loose with the truth.
Yes.
That demeans their reputation.
Oh, their poor reputation.
Hitler was actually a very nice fellow.
And Obama never said anything of the kind. Of course, Stuart Varney gets to go on Fox News because they found a guy with a British accent who thinks socialized health care is a bad idea.
Right.
And as an American, I'm appalled.
No, he's not even, he's just a distant relative of Madonna's through Detroit.
But what do you think about this, Carl? When you hear that, you know, the rich calling themselves the victims, which happens a lot in Black History Month.
Think of it this way. If your whole point about giving billions of dollars to political causes is that you have a right to be active in politics, don't begrudge us the right to bash you over the head for it.
I mean, exactly.
If you're gonna step into the political fray, you have to be prepared to have your foot chopped off.
Yep. Exactly.
And I can think of no two people in this country that deserve it more than the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to own politicians and play this game, then you don't get away with you know, crying foul when you're called out on your own malfeasance. I mean, we're at a point now where billionaires pay Fox News to say that anyone who wants to tax billionaires is guilty of class warfare, and which is class warfare. I mean,
well,
what's the airwaves.
Slogan? It's billionaires paying millionaires to tell.
Well, the way I call it, rich people pay Fox people to make middle class people blame poor people.
Yeah, that's it.
That's right. That's right.
Yep.
I'm going to put that on a T-shirt someday.
Carl, we need to take a break, but can you hang around for a little
bit?
Sure. All right. Cool.
We'll be right back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show taking your calls. But first, Carl Frisch rejoined us right after the break.
What in the name of holy hell is going on here?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. I got Stephanie Miller.
Actually, we don't have Stephanie Miller.
No, we don't have Stephanie Miller.
We don't have her, but we do have Sonny and Cher.
We do have Bananas.
And the memory of a golden age when you could do a Bob Dylan impression and have a number one single.
Well, there you go.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Chris and Jim and the great Carl Frisch of Bullfight Strategy. Hello, Carl.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Welcome
Hi.
Back.
Hi. We were talking about America's sweetheart, Mitt Romney, and the vitriol of the right, and it's a really good week for it. I have a... Dana Lash is one of my favorite thinkers. And,
yeah. You and I were just saying she's kind of a lazy debater.
You know, I had the unique experience of being on of doing a one-on-one debate with her once on CNN, on Joy Behar's show, and I wasn't really prepared for for the kind of person who would say things like this. Do you have that quote?
I think it's funny. The same week that you have these MSNBC heads talking about how horrible it is, and Jan Brewer is apparently a racist for pointing her finger at Barack Obama. Everything's racist now. In fact, racism doesn't even mean what it used to mean anymore. I don't know what the word is for that's going to take the place of racism, but it's not racism anymore, according to progressives.
Ooh, that's a soothing voice. Deep
now, I want to ask you about this, Carl, because I actually kind of agree with Dana to some extent that I don't think the word racism means what it used to mean. I think many times when we say racism, we mean tribalism, you know, fear of someone that's different from me, not necessarily race hatred. And I think that one thing the birther controversy showed us is the real difference between bigotry and racism. Whereas a bigot would say, I don't like a black president because I don't like black people. A racist would say, I have no problem with a black president, but I'm pretty sure he's not really from this country because I read something in print somewhere. To me, racism more implies institutionalized bigotry that we don't even second guess. It's so ingrained in the society, as opposed to just plain hatred. Am I completely whack on that?
I think you're a little wrong. First and foremost, they're all ignorant. Mm-hmm. Secondly... I'm not so concerned whether or not somebody says that they, not only do they hate the black president, but they hate all black people versus they hate the black president and I don't hate all black people. Mm-hmm. I think that culturally, real bigots have been trained in a way to say certain things, and they're not going to let, you know, their full bigot flag fly in front of strangers. You know, they know that they're not supposed to say, I don't, why do you think that Mitt Romney says, look, I'm against same-sex marriage, but I'm against discrimination of LGBT people? I mean, it's a completely contradictory statement, because he knows that in polite company now, you cannot say the crazy stuff that right-wingers used to say about gay people. Many conservatives, you know, if it was 30, 40 years ago, they'd be using different language. It's just not acceptable anymore. And the people in the middle of the road who might have anxiety towards the idea of an African-American president, but they can't figure out why, the reason that right-wingers can get away with, you know, saying horribly racially insensitive things about him while also claiming that they have no problem with black people is because they're appealing to those people in the middle who can't figure out why they have this problem. But if they were to come out and just be flat-out racist, they'd be turning people off.
Exactly. I think a lot of folks don't necessarily have hatred in their heart, but they never felt this inferior to a black man before, this mentally inferior, professionally inferior to a black man before. And I think in many ways Obama's success touches them in a way they do not like to be touched.
Oh.
And most of the people that we know, most of the people that we know from the right-wing media or Fox News that say these crazy things, I don't think that they're racist. I think they're worse than racist because they're playing on the racist sensibilities of their listeners and viewers.
I'm glad you said that.
And, to make money, and that's worse than actually having the hatred in your heart. Because if you're truly racist, you're just stupid and you don't have the cultural experience to accept other people. But if you're not racist and you're playing on the sensibilities of other people, that's worse.
Well, we talked about this 2 days ago, and I caught a little heat for it with Steph because I was saying I don't believe that Ron Paul has hatred in his heart. I don't necessarily believe he's racist. I do believe he appealed to racists to try to raise money through his newsletter.
I think he sold his heart at a libertarian fundraiser in the 80s. I don't think he's capable of human emotion. And, you know, and I don't think Ron Paul's a racist. I just think his political philosophy is.
it's classist for damn sure.
Yeah.
Carl Frisch, where can people follow you?
They can follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. I'm trying to get to 10,000 followers by my birthday on February 21st.
You can do it, Carl.
Let's make this happen, America.
I'm about 1,300 away, and then my website's carlfrisch.com.
That's great. Carl with a K. Thank you. What a man, what a man, what a mighty good man. Always a pleasure, Mr. Frisch.
We love
Thank you,
Carl.
So much.
With the En Vogue quote. That's awesome.
Yeah.
1-800-STEPH-12. We'll be right back.
Stephanie Miller.
Okay, you're right. I don't fit in here. I am skinny, not glamorous, and I don't know that much about fashion, but I'm smart.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning. We're glad you're with us. And I'm very glad to welcome our next guest, Congressman Henry Cuellar from the great state of Texas, who is a hero to all Americans who care about the stuff we put in our bodies and the stuff our kids eat every day in school. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you over the radio. The journal Nature is publishing a commentary called The Toxic Truth About Sugar, in which the researchers argue that sugar has a lot in common with alcohol and tobacco when it comes to how it can hurt our bodies and therefore should be regulated in a similar way. That's bound to cause a lot of controversy, but to me, you along with the First Lady are two of the real heroes in the war on obesity, something that a lot of people are afraid to come out and talk about. I think that the work you've done is both a moral issue, as well as a national security issue, and an economic issue, and a healthcare issue as well. And you announced last week that nearly 32 million school kids across the country are going to be now eating much healthier in school thanks to brand new nutrition standards.
That's right. You know, when you talk about nearly 32 million school kids across the nation, they're going to be eating more fruits, more vegetables, more whole grains. You know, this is thanks to a new nutrition standard that has really revamped the school menus, and it's going to be done over a phase. But as you know, back in 2011, the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act got passed and signed into law, and now this is one way that we want to make sure our kids are just eating healthy, because we do know that instead of eating pizzas and chips and all that, now that they're going to be substituted with something that's more healthy, this will be the way to do it. And the best way you set those little habits is to do them while they're young, not when they're 30 or 40 years. You know, by that time, those habits are pretty ingrained in individuals. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're right. I think people will part with their religion before they part with their comfort food. But I guess that's some of the what you're up against is adults who don't want to hear this. You encounter a lot of resistance from people who don't want to hear about new nutritional standards and think that should be something that's done by families.
Yes, and it does. But, you know, keep in mind that, you know, some folks are saying, no, that the school shouldn't be doing this. They should be doing something else. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, we do have 32 million, at least 32 million kids across the nation that do get those lunches or breakfasts. And if they're going to be having those, why can we not as adults just, you know, do a little change, shift the menus around, give our kids something healthy, and let them go ahead and be able to hopefully not gain weight or lose some weight and do this. And I think this is a way that we can go ahead and do this thing in a better way that we can help our kids. And it really, really, really is amazing just, you know, what the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing. As you know, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is the one that implements the lunches and the breakfasts. Mm-hmm. And this will, you know, be some changes. As you know, it's going to give the schools time to do this. It's going to be phased in over a three-year period. It's not a unfunded mandate. We actually provide funding for this. So the school districts should be able to not only teach the academics, but I think we should also teach our kids how to eat healthy so they can have long, prosperous lives.
I congratulate you on all your success here, especially as part of the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, which you supported and was signed into law last year. Mm-hmm. To me, I think it's what patriotism is all about. And if you care about the long-term wellness of America, you care about the food we're putting into our bodies. When are you going to go after high fructose corn syrup, Congressman? You going to go after it?
Yes, we are.
All right. Good. Then you're my hero. Thank you so much. Where can people learn more about what you're doing, Congressman Cuellar?
Well, you know, certainly one of the things they can do is contact me on my webpage. You know, we do have a webpage that's available. And then the other thing is what they can do is they can also get on the webpage of the USDA. But if they want to get a hold of me so we can let them know what's happening, it's www.house.gov/Cuellar. C-U-E-L-L-A-R.
And we just put a link to it up on our website at stephaniemiller.com and up on our Facebook page as well. So
Thank you so much, and y'all, you know, have a good day.
All right.
Right on. Thank you for making us proud of Texas, sir. Congressman Henry Cuellar, what a pleasure to have him on the air.
And while he was talking about healthy food, I was eating a crappy sandwich from the machine upstairs.
Good for you. So. Good for you. See, I live with a vegetarian, so I can talk this way because I've had it forced on me. There was a mandate imposed in our home.
Oh, and I was eating. I was eating my cottage cheese with pineapple.
Good for you. Well,
what?
Smell Chris Lavoie waving that in our face.
We don't need to go to break, but we can finish up Right Wing World. How's that?
I'm so ready to finish up some Right Wing World. Thank you, Chris, because there's a lot. You sent some really good sound bites this week, and I know we left off with America's Sweetheart, Dana Lash.
Yeah.
But Fred Beetle Barnes on Griff Bear had some.
Well, we have Joseph Farah of WorldNet Daily, who was on Hannity.
Oh, let's hear that one first.
Yeah.
Is he trying to position himself for a vice presidential candidacy there?
I think that's taken. I think it's going to be Rubio. Yeah. That's my guess.
If it's not, somebody's lost their mind.
Rubio is not eligible.
What do you mean
Rubio? You're going to lose 10% of the Republican vote because he's not a natural-born citizen. We've been through this with Obama now for 4 years.
I don't believe that.
No worms again.
He snuck a birther conspiracy in there. Of course,
yeah,
Joseph
sure
Farah is the king of birther conspiracies. He's
now, again, that's racism, okay? Yep. The birther stuff is racism. You don't have to have an ounce of hatred in your heart. If you go around saying that the first... Because I can guarantee you, no birther you'll talk to has ever demanded a Caucasian politician produce their birth certificate, okay?
Right.
If you automatically believe the guy with the Kenyan name and the brown skin might not be from this country in spite of the fact he's released two birth certificates... That's racism.
Yep.
Not bigotry, racism.
But wasn't he born in Cuba? Not Obama, obviously.
Well, yeah, so Rubio, that's the question, because this right. is the first I've heard of this, Chris. You know, I've been along with Bill O'Reilly saying for 2 years that Rubio's a lock for the next vice presidential nomination.
I don't think there are any restrictions on vice presidents. I think it's only on presidents.
Well, no, there is on vice presidents because they can become president. Yeah, that's why Henry Kissinger could never be a VP nominee for
anyone.
He
okay.
wasn't born in the country.
Well, then
yeah.
I guess Rubio can't be because he was born in Cuba.
How the heck is the GOP supposed to suck up to Latino votes now? I'm all worried.
The world may never know.
Who can we get? Ricky Martin? No, I don't think
no.
so.
No, they don't like him because A, he's a homo, and B, he's Latino.
Yes, of course. They like the good. They like. I think they like Marco Rubio because he sucks up to the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. He's a good Latino. He may lie about his upbringing, but he does hate Castro very publicly for fundraising purposes. And really, one of the finest comb overs in the Republican Party. I mean, we can agree on that, right? On an aesthetic level, the man's just. I mean, I he's got to be in Florida because he couldn't be in Chicago. Too many heavy winds.
Well, yeah, but how does he maintain that hairstyle? With all that humidity in Florida. It's got a frizz.
I would say enough final net to put his own hole in the ozone layer.
Right.
Most likely. There's a lot of hairspray on Marco Rubio.
But
very attractive.
Even
man.
More than on Donald Trump. Huge amount of hairspray. Huge.
Hey, let me ask you, Jim, since you're my authority on all things Trumpish, he says he's going to make an endorsement. Is it going to be Gingrich?
Wow. It sounds right.
Think about who's come out for Gingrich already. I mean, really, it's the fun wing of the Republican Party. It's the ones the comedians like have all come out for Gingrich. It's been Herman Cain. It's been Rick Perry. It's been Todd Palin. It's been unofficially Sarah.
It's all been the ones who never worked with Newt Gingrich in any capacity.
Yeah.
Seriously. Everybody who's worked with Newt Gingrich in some capacity has endorsed Mitt Romney.
I don't like Romney. I think he's a big phony. Huge phony.
I got yelled at by Soledad O'Brien for saying huge too many times this morning about Donald Trump on the show.
Ooh, but, wow, you got yelled at by Soledad?
Yeah. Oh, she called me a heckler.
That's kind of an S&M fantasy.
Yeah, that's actually kind of hot.
Kind of get yelled at by Soledad O'Brien?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. Wow, the camera does not do her justice. Not the worst looking person at CNN, I'll tell you that.
Right. All right, but she helped to launch MSNBC. Do you remember that? She was one of the original hosts on MSNBC. She did that show with the virtual reality character thing.
Back when they were hiring a lot of right-wingers at MSNBC.
That's right.
Day.
Yeah.
Back when Michael Savage and when it was Tucker Carlson's playground. Yeah, well, no, I like what Soledad O'Brien's doing on that show. And I find I'm doing it a lot lately, and it's enjoyable. They're sort of doing a Morning Joe thing that's a little less cliquish. And,
yeah.
They get a good crew, but I'm always sitting next to Roland Martin and you know.
Roland and Martin?
That guy. Don't get in between Roland Martin and the camera. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
No, he's a nice guy. I do like him. Right. There's more in right-wing world. Do we have time for more of these?
Yeah, we've got time for Fred Barnes here.
Romney just doesn't know he doesn't know the language, he doesn't know the tone to appeal to conservatives. And I'm talking about real conservatives, the majority of whom voted for Newt Gingrich, overwhelmingly in South Carolina, but elsewhere as well, in Florida as well. And Romney has to appeal to them. These are the ground troops for any successful Republican presidential campaign. They're the people who show up. They're the volunteers.
Why don't he says ground troops about Republicans? I picture jackboots and jodhpurs.
I know. I hear ground troops for Republicans, and I'm like, well, I know Bush and Cheney aren't showing up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think actually that Fred makes a very good point. We talked about this earlier in the week. You know, the GOP for a long time has been three basic types of people. I talk about this on the Sexy Liberal Live album, Volume 1, now available in CD form. There are always three kinds of core Republicans. You had your social conservatives, you had your Wall Street guys, and you have your guys who just like Tom Clancy books, okay? But it's really been a struggle with the Wall Street guys who run the party, who own the party, and thanks to Nixon's Southern strategy, they know how to tell the social conservatives just enough of what they want to hear, like about illegal immigration, which they don't care about. Wall Street wants to have an exploitable labor base for low wages.
Mm-hmm.
Abortion, Wall Street doesn't care one bit about that, but they know they can dangle the abortion carrot and get people to vote for them. And the gay bashing, which more and more we're seeing Wall Street turn away from because capitalism has realized that our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters are a great buying market.
They have a lot of money and quite often no kids. So. Yeah,
oh, unless you're Marcus Bachman.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
But Fred's very right, you know. I mean, that's the thing. Newt Gingrich, it's not that these social conservatives love Newt Gingrich or they admire him or they think that he's a good guy or they even think he's going to win. They like the fact that someone is coming out there and appearing strong. And, you know, and that someone's out there speaking their language. As Bill Clinton said after the 2004 elections, Americans would rather go for someone who's strong and wrong than weak and right, which was a pretty smack down to John Kerry. But God bless John Kerry for not getting the job. He lucked out. But I think that Fred Barnes is really, really onto something here. Mitt Romney doesn't know how to speak to the conservative base. He doesn't know how to speak to anybody, really. And
that's because he's been in his rich man bubble. His entire life.
You're exactly right. And it's not got nothing to do with being rich or being Mormon or anything else. It's just the way the guy has been his whole life.
Right.
He's a man who I don't think has a lot of appreciation for his own privilege.
No. Nope.
I know if he did, he wouldn't say something like what he said yesterday about poor people. And I don't know how they really think that this guy's going to electrify the base. I really think that the more people see who Mitt Romney is and how uninspiring he is, you're going to see a lot of people being re-inspired with President Obama version 2.0.
Yep, I think so too.
Because President Obama is starting to remind us of candidate Obama, and we all like that guy quite a bit.
Yes, we did.
And with that in mind, here's Bon Jovi to take us to the break, but we will have you taking your calls when we return at 1-800-STEPH-1-2.
It is a happening spot.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Martha Reeves and the Vandellas on the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by the great and brilliant Jim Ward and Chris LaVoy in L.A. We are bicoastal today, although some would say we're just confused. And that's Martha. There's a famous story. Bob Dylan was allegedly once pulled over for speeding, and he didn't have a license, but he did have a picture of him with Martha Reeves.
Oh.
And the cop let him go. Dylan told that story himself. And we're taking your calls. Let's start with Carl from Nashville, because he's been on hold the longest. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I've been thoroughly enjoying the show. And speaking of the Beatles.
We'll fix that. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the Beatles, have you all know the basketball player Ricky Rubio just got drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves?
I've heard of him, but I haven't seen him play.
He looks just like a young Ringo Starr. You need to check him out on the internet. I mean, he's a dead ringer for Ringo. Every time I see him, I hear Paul. Anyway,
I think he must be a bit taller than Ringo.
Oh, God.
He's the illegitimate grandson of Ringo Starr.
Well, better that than looking like a young Pete Best, I guess.
Absolutely. Hey, guys, I tell you what, Mitt Romney picked a bad day to play with gasoline in a match yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because in contrast, this morning, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, had the national prayer meeting. And, you know, when you with the Christian thing, you're pretty much talking about taking care of the poor.
Yes.
So it just fit in perfectly to what the president was talking about this morning. Am I not my brother's keeper? And if you are a Christian, you should be your brother's keeper. And bigger than that, even bigger than that, all the rural white America that vote religiously, pun intended, with the Republican Party, he's talking about you, all you people in rural Tennessee here, where the poverty rate is astronomical. Even when Republicans, their good old days was in office, they've always been poor, very poor, and it's particular in the South and in this state of Tennessee. When Mitt Romney says he don't care about poor people, he only care about Americans.
Yep.
He's talking about you. Please stop voting against your self-interest. It is amazing that these people get tricked every two 2 to 4 to 6 years to vote against their self-interest when a rich guy like Mitt Romney lets you know where the Republican Party stands. They don't really care about you. They just care for your vote.
You're exactly right, but that's the history of how the status quo gets people to vote against their own interest. You know, we were talking earlier in the week about the Confederacy. These soldiers didn't own slaves, but they had the 1% of their day coming to them saying, hey, you're under attack right now. Better go out and lay your life on the line for us and our profits. It works.
This is a strategy that the Republican Party has used for at least 50 years politically that, hey, poor white people, other people are going to get what you don't already have, and you may not be able to get. But, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people are realizing that they didn't get their 40 acres of trickle-down. And they're teed up. And then y'all have a good day. Continue with the good show.
Oh, bless you. Thank you for waiting on hold, Carl. But, you know, Carl makes a very good point. A lot of us have been waiting by the mailbox for our trickle-down prize in the mail for 30 years now. And again, the Book of Matthew, man, you don't need to believe in the Bible, but you got to have the Book of Matthew to throw at your conservative brothers and sisters. Matthew 25, 36 to like 38. When Jesus said, you know, when did you come to see me in prison? When did you take care of me when I was sick? When did you give me clothes when I was naked? And his friend said, well, when were you in prison or naked or sick? And he goes, when you didn't do it for the least of my people, you didn't do it for me. That's the religion. Yep. You want a government based on Christian values, then you act like it and you vote like it and you take care of the least among us.
Right. But their argument will be, well, the churches can do that. That is not government's place to do that.
Of course they do. And you know what I say back? And I had this argument this morning with my good friend Will Kane, who's a terrific conservative on CNN, who I like a lot. He works for Glenn Beck. But I had this argument this morning. Here's the difference. Jesus didn't have democracy.
Right.
Okay? Jesus said, take care of the poor, take care of the sick. But he was living under occupation by an empire from Europe in the Middle East, which historically hasn't worked out too well for white folks. what we're talking about here is democracy, whereas Jesus didn't have the one man, one vote concept. If you really believe in the teachings of this Jesus you claim to follow, then you really believe in helping the sick, helping the poor. Well, guess what? You're a fund custodian. You have a say in how the money in this country gets spent. You have a say in where the tax dollars go. And the essence of being liberal is I'd rather have my tax dollars help people over here than blow them up over there.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to have your tax dollars help the sick and the poor and those in prison, great. It's a free country. You don't have to care about them. But don't you ever say you want a government based on Christian values, because you don't. The irony is it's the liberal heathens trying to have a government based on Christian values.
Right. Could an argument be made that the government is the only entity in America that's big enough to help everybody who needs it in this country?
I think you're exactly right, Chris, because it'd be great if we had Ron Paul Fantasyland and churches could pick up all the slack.
Yeah,
we tried it
don't.
For a couple hundred years. Didn't work. I mean, we have no appreciation for how hard life was for seniors and sick folks before Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Right.
We have no way of measuring it. So, yeah, government is we the people, and we the people decided, you know, in the last century, you know what? We're going to take care of each other and make this safety net that Mitt Romney takes for granted and Rush Limbaugh despises, because we do care about our brother. We are our brother's keeper, and we do care about the least among us.
Yep.
And you don't need to believe in God to believe in that. Let's go to Jill in Madison.
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Amen to that, John.
Holla.
And can I just say I'm a John Fugelsang Christian?
I totally
get it. And
well,
I, you know,
if there is a God, he might smite you for socking that way. Thank you.
No. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, that is what Jesus talked about. And they, you know, they use religion for bad things. Anyways, I won't go into that too much. Just want to say I was a
Can you hang on for the break, Jill?
Yeah, we're going to a hard break here, so we need to have you hold. Okay.
Come back.
Okay,
we'll get your point. You can gush over me some more. It's the Stephanie Miller Show, taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the
Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from New York City and Los Angeles. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for an ailing Steph. We hope she'll be back tomorrow.
Yep.
Joined by the brilliant Chris Lavoie and Jim Ward in the L.A. Bureau. And we're getting really excited around here because the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Tour has been a phenomenon. We got 4 Pollstar nominations. It's the first political comedy album to ever reach number one on iTunes, Billboard, and Amazon's comedy charts.
Yep.
The tour grossed over $1 million, which is more than I get paid in a whole month. And really, it's been so successful, except for one thing, a really pathetic dearth of East Coast dates. That all changes this weekend. We are bringing the beast to Philly. Can I hear a promo?
Oh,
man.
Eventually.
Philadelphia,
there it is.
We progressives hold these truths to be self-evident, that all sexy liberals are created equal, and that we are endowed by the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, laughter, and the pursuit of silliness. On February 4th, 2012, the comedy tour that is taking the country by storm will perform live at the Merriam Theater, featuring John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, and the tastiest of all tasty cakes, Stephanie Miller.
Yummy!
Tickets are available online at KimmelCenter.org or by calling 215-893-1999.
999.
Philadelphia, come show your favorite progressives some of your brotherly love. That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour on February 4th at the Merriam Theater. Philly, these liberals will be sure to ring your Liberty Bell.
Thank you, Philadelphia.
Get sexy, huh?
Yeah!
I don't know why it took so long to get this tour to land the Rockies. You know, I mean, Jim, why we gotta wait so long to get this into Philadelphia?
Women, weaken legs! You're gonna eat lightning and crap thunder!
I have never seen that movie either.
What? You've never seen Rocky?
Never seen Rocky, sorry.
Oh, Chris.
What?
Oh, fix that this weekend. You gotta see Rocky, all Rocky right. 2, maybe Rocky 3 for fun, and then skip to Rocky 6.
I think I saw Rocky 4.
Rocky 17.
No, Rocky 4 didn't happen. Okay, that was just the 80s, too much coke. And no, you want to see Rocky? Rocky 2, which is a very fine film, except for the silly Adrian in a coma sequence. But I would argue Stallone's
great.
Best.
Oh, great, ruin it for everybody.
No, okay, I did see Rocky 3, but that's only because Grease 2 was sold out when we went to the theater.
Well, you were lucky, because Rocky 3 is better than Grease 2. Rocky 3, of course, features Mr. T and Hulk Hogan.
And Bullwinkle.
It's not what I would call a good film, but it certainly is fun. And I would say that the Rocky Apollo Creed training together in downtown L.A. and the hood sequences are really the apex of 80s accidental homoerotic American cinema. But Rocky 6 is called Rocky Balboa. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very good movie. Do yourself a favor and drag yourself up to some culture here.
Because okay. It's Rocky. We're going to Philadelphia finally. We're finally going to go there. I don't talk like that, but you're in Philly. Sexy liberal gotta do, you know what I'm saying?
And Philadelphia is like the perfect midway distance between D.C. and New York.
Yeah, and I'm gonna do my Rocky impression the entire time to alienate all the audience to pay money to see the show. So that never gets old. Never gets old. I am the law!
No, that's Judge Dredd.
The aptly named Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd. They're showing that at Guantanamo Bay right now. Jill in Madison's been on hold for a very long time. Are you there, Jill?
Oh, yes, I have, but it's okay.
No.
You guys are doing great, even without the estrogen.
Well, that's why you're here.
that's why I called. And I do like to call in once in a while, and usually I'm nervous, but I'm getting much better.
Well, around us, you have no reason to be.
Huh?
Around us, you better not be nervous around us.
Anyways, I wanted to ask Jim something, and I want to talk about the young Ron Paul enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm.
My 17-year-old son came home from school one day, and he was holding a $10 bill, and he says, "Mom, do you know anything about money?" And I said, "Well, I know I'm not very good with it." And then I noticed the way he was holding it, and I said, "Oh, you mean that means nothing?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he starts going into this whole thing about the Fed and Rothschild, and I know that Jim is, you know, he knows all the conspiracies and everything. But my kids have been on YouTube watching this really crazy stuff, and I'm, like, telling them to calm down. Look at history. We've had these fights. They're cyclical. It goes on and on.
Right.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of propaganda out there for libertarians, for the young people. It kind of concerns me.
Well, I mean...
So what do I do, Jim? Where do I...
Well, I mean, there's...
Help me, Jim. You're my only hope.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
It's quite a rabbit hole to fall into.
You know, well, both Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul were interested in auditing the Fed to see what the heck's going on up there, which I think is, you know, a worthwhile endeavor. You remember, what's his face? Greenspan. His oracular pronouncements. The wolf will fly at midnight, but he will not be jonesing for cigarettes. You know, just ridiculous stuff, and people were reading the tea leaves. So, you know, I think it is worth investigating what's going on there, but I'm not sure I buy the international, you know, conspiracy.
Well, I mean, I think it's great to have a debate in this country about the Fed, about returning to a gold standard. I would tell your son that advocating for auditing the Fed is quite reasonable. I think it's something liberals and conservatives could agree on. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to think we can agree on auditing the Pentagon at the same time, especially with the Democrat running it now. That would be very nice to see. But, I mean, when you start talking about ending the Fed, that's just never going to happen. Even if it's right, it's just never going to happen.
We have to work within the system, and he has to stay in school.
Exactly. And again, you know, Ron Paul lives in a wonderful libertarian fantasy land where we cannot have any government regulations and everything would be just fine. And wouldn't business have a much easier time if every state had its own regulation with no controlling authority making things consistent? It'd be great.
It's called chaos.
I mean, you know, it's terrific. I wish that kids were getting turned on to a guy like Ralph Nader or a guy like Bernie Sanders, or you know, a somewhat more humanistic approach. Because Ron Paul.
I'll have him like check out Bernie Sanders. That's a great idea.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, Bernie's a great guy in his speeches, and Nader too, and Gore Vidal. Yeah. Get him into the Chomsky and the intellectuals of the left because their stuff is a bit more grounded in reality than Ron Paul.
Right. And one more thing, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Have you checked out the Fanatic Salon? Jeff Michalski and Jay Norris in L.A.
They
used to work at the Second City. The legendary Fred Kaz is there.
Well, there we go.
If you have not seen or heard of Fred Kaz or worked with him, he was the piano player at the Second City for years and years.
Okay.
Definitely, you know.
Well, I know Jeff Michalski and Jane Morris. They're two of the finest comedians I've ever seen play. They're two brilliant improvers, great teachers as well. And Fanatic Salon, I performed in that room. Yes, I did a show there. I did a show there with Rick Overton the night before Obama was inaugurated, where we retired all of our Bush jokes. So we had the final Bush bash at Fanatic Salon where we got to bash it.
Everything must go.
Yes. So we probably know a lot of the same people because I waitressed at the Second City from like 1977 to 87.
Oh, wow. I probably sucked up to the same people you served.
Right.
Well, I thank you for the call, Jill. And are you going to come see us? Are you going to come see us in Madison?
I am not. I am from Chicago, even though I'm living near Madison. I am doing the patriotic thing with my tax return, and I hope there's still tickets in Chicago. I am going to Chicago.
There.
And a shout out to my Second City peeps. Be there.
Well, you get them quick while you can. But we are going to have our 1 year. Thank you. Thanks so much for the call, Jill.
Thanks for
calling. We are going to have our 1 year anniversary show for the Sexy Liberal Tour, right where it all began, right there in Madison, Wisconsin. And then soon I'll be able to announce I'm bringing my solo show to Madison. I think a couple weeks after that. So
really,
that'll be
That's very cool.
I love Madison, and well, this whole tour began. I'll tell you the secret. We've never said this on the air before, but a year ago, I just gotten back from Central America playing for the troops in El Salvador, and I met up with Roland, the tour booker, and he said, I want to bring your one-man show on the road. And I said, let me pitch you another idea and introduce you to some crazy radio folk I know. So, then we lost our lives, and the whole year became Sexy Liberal Year.
Yep.
So now that a year has passed, Roland was finally like, all right, let's get your theater piece back up on the road again. So I'm now going to be touring and competing with myself on the road.
Oh, wow.
Because I really like airplane food. Do we have time for more calls?
Yeah. We got time.
Okay, let's go to Juan in Chicago. He's been waiting for quite a while. Are you there, Juan?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
Enjoying your show. Good morning. I have three big issues. The first one is I'm not, you know, everybody talks about, you know, Jan Brewer pointing her finger, and, you know, I was disappointed at that, but nobody's given any thought to
Michelle Obama. I mean, Michelle Obama having a white woman put the finger on her husband's face, man, I'd like to see the smackdown there. Seriously, I mean, she would be more intimidating than anyone. You know, I would rather much pick up on Barack Obama than on Michelle. So, I mean, I would really like to see a match between Janice Brewer versus Michelle Obama.
Yes.
Well, I see the point.
Maybe a short fight.
I see the point you're making, Juan, but I think that both Obamas have given us a very good object lesson in not taking the bait and the wisdom of not taking the bait. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, if they were to take any of this bait and fight back...
aggressive black people.
Oh, or unpresidential, undignified. Uh-huh. I mean, that's all the right wing wants is for them to take the bait and fight back so then they can call them unpresidential.
Yep. Yeah,
so.
But she's going to need to slap down. Anyway, that was a second point.
Make it pay-per-view. Yeah,
yeah.
All right. Thank you, Juan.
I had a second point. How disingenuous Mitt Romney is. You know, he calls himself he's a presidential candidate for the Republicans. But, I mean... You know, tax evasion is a big deal when it comes to hiding money offshore. You know, recently the Cayman Islands folded and so did the, Switzerland. But what about the other, tax havens where the IRS has no tax treaties like, Liechtenstein, Belize, then you also have Panama. I mean, this guy is probably hoarding more money there and being unpatriotic because he's, making money and pretending to be an offshore corporation because maybe he's a person too. But then, he's exploiting, hardworking people in America. So, very disingenuous and very unpatriotic, and nobody's calling on him. But I think the IRS should really, do more investigation on that.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, I thank you for the call, Juan, and I think you make a very, very good point in saying that it is a matter of patriotism. You know, pay your own fair share, man. Mm-hmm. You talk about supporting our troops. Well, a lot of us support our troops by paying our taxes, and that's a really good way to do it. And, everyone's going to find a way to cheat on their taxes, avoid their taxes, get any write-offs they can. But when you're making the kind of money Mitt Romney makes... And he paid, again, the guy gives plenty to charity, God bless him. But when you bring in the kind of money he makes without working, this is the point we have to hammer home to our Republican friends, okay? Mitt Romney doesn't work for his money, and he pays a lower percentage of taxes than people who do work for their money. And this could finally be the crack that lets us open up the sky to our friends in the conservative matrix to realize they are supporting the wrong guys. It's not patriotic. And I do thank you for the call. We'll be taking more calls at 1-800-STEF-12. I'm John Fugelsang, along with Chris and Jim, and we are Stephanie Miller.
It's not radio. It's Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, and that was a little bit of Marvin Gaye right there to honor the great Don Cornelius, who we lost this week. The creator of Soul Train, which ran for 35 years on TV and brought a lot of terrific music to a lot of lame white people. just saw City of Buffalo has shut down Occupy Buffalo last night at 2 a.m. Of all the Occupy movements I visited, I found Buffalo to be one of the best, most positive, and definitely the one with the best relationship with the police. They actually had a police... Appreciation Day at Occupy Buffalo, and very sorry to hear that that's happening. But, the thing about the Occupy movement, 2011 was the year that things got so bad that people actually went to sleep in tents and gave up comfort and convenience to protest how bad it was, and those people got called lazy.
Yep, exactly.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to hear anything about permits, okay? The Constitution's pretty black and white about this.
Yeah,
that
is a permit.
People can petition to redress grievances, and the Constitution doesn't say they can petition to redress grievances until the 1960s come, and then people create a lot of local ordinances to stop protests. No, they have a right to be there. They're paying their taxes. They have a right to show up and represent.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's an eyesore. I know it's inconvenient.
I know it's a little smelly.
I know it's smelly, and this is what democracy smells like.
Yeah.
I'm so sad that, like, we haven't seen more support, and I'm so eager to see what comes of that energy and what the Occupy movement turns into this year. And I just want to salute Occupy Buffalo. We were there in November for the tour, and I met some really wonderful people there. And they had great tents, too. They actually had a wigwam there, too, which I was very impressed by.
Hmm. So you're two tents.
Yeah, so more than two tents.
Exactly. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. Yeah. I'm a teepee.
You're two tents.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Benny threw that joke
away. Was that a Jack Benny joke? I always thought it came from the back of Boy's Life.
You know, I thought it was a joke that Carl Reiner had told, and then I got to meet Carl Reiner, and he's like, I never heard that joke. So
really?
Yeah, wow. I don't know.
Maybe he's just trying to deny propagating it.
Don't look at me.
I didn't. I'm not responsible for that.
Hey, we got the brilliant Greg Palast is coming up after the next break, one of my favorite journalists and writers. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the phones right now just for a second. Wanda in Illinois has been on hold for quite a while. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, hour and a half. Love listening to you. Couple things. Yesterday, we all know what he said, which, A, not surprised, just a little surprised he actually said it out loud.
Exactly. At least he said it. At least he admits it.
Yeah, and then we should just take him to task. Okay, you said there's problems with the safety net. How are we going to fix it? You know, and I used your Facebook page, and I posted my link about the social safety net. And I really want to tell him social safety net, $883 a month is what I lived on when I was on Social Security disability.
Wow, you were living it up, huh? What a welfare queen.
Yeah. But the thing that got missed yesterday was when he was on Morning Joe with Mika, she actually asked him, you know, we know what you're not for. What are you for when it comes to jobs? And off-the-cuff remarks are his downfall. And he said something about the number five reason or thing that he has for jobs is that union bosses need to stop telling companies where they can grow and where they can't.
What?
And that falls into what's going on in Indiana. And
the all-powerful unions.
Yeah, if the Republicans get not only in charge of the White House, but the Congress and the Senate, because those are going to be so incredibly important, I think there's going to be that whole, you know, referendum nationally on the right to work for crap.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're exactly right. And to do a play on what I said, something I said earlier in the show, rich people pay Fox people to make working people blame union people. And it works, and they do it. And, of course, it's the all-powerful unions that want to hire less workers, and that's why they don't want to open up more factories. It's just it's complete rubbish. This is all about the 1% protecting profits over people and nothing else. Great piece on the Daily Beast about it today, too. And I thank you for the call, Wanda. God, you get smart people calling this show.
Profits are people, my friend.
Yeah, we just kind of put up anyone who calls. So that, really? that tells me all of our listeners are smart.
Well, you know, more than 1 in 5 children was living below the poverty line in 2010. And the Mitt Romney...
Blame yourself.
It means the rich need to pay fewer taxes. That's what that means to rich.
Oh, of course.
I mean, they now say that 1 in 3 kids lives below the poverty line. Mm. So I guess the rich have to pay a lot less in taxes.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And she's right. He said, we have a safety net there. If it needs a repair, I'll fix it. But nothing on specifics.
Nope.
Nothing.
By fix, he means destroy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I know Mitt Romney's not going to be too hard for the president to defeat, even if unemployment goes back to 9%. But she's right, man. It's all about the Senate, because I think as much of a nightmare as Mitt Romney in the White House is, the nightmare of Barack Obama with a Republican House and Senate is equally chilling. And we got to do everything we can. I'm not a Democrat, but you know what? I am going all out for the Democrats this year.
And you can't even escape to Canada anymore, because Harper's turning out to be a
right-wing asshat.
Yeah.
My God, I know. And speaking of Canada, if any of these guys were really believing in the free market, we'd all be able to buy cheap Canadian drugs. So that's the kind of capitalism that they espouse. For us, by us. Let's take another call.
We only have about 30 seconds left in the
segment.
Oh, Chris,
you pull down my pants and taunt me.
Sorry.
what he does.
We'll take more calls as we progress. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And we'll have Greg Palast when we come back as well.
I love this guy, man. This guy's brilliant. We'll be right back after the break.
Stephanie Miller.
Must be humbling to suck on so many different levels.
Okay. Well, it is, in fact. That's why I'm here. I'm John Feeblesang, filling in for Steph. It's been a beautiful week so far, and I've been enjoying being here every day, even though I wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
But it's always a pleasure to be
with the great... It's February's with Fuglesang.
The great Jim Ward, the brilliant Chris Lavoie, and I'm so excited that Stephanie caught Jim's exploding eyeball disease, because that means I get to talk to this next guy. 10 years ago, Greg Palast wrote The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which is a book that every American should read, and now it seems like the man's topped himself with his new release, Vulture's Picnic,
which is going to
tell you everything about vulture capitalism and Romneyism that you don't want to know but need to know. Greg Palast, welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, John. Glad to be with you, sexy liberals.
Thank you. Well, actually, I'm Stephanie and Hal are the sexy liberals. I play the role of show in that group.
Okay.
I should clarify that. And I do hope that you'll grace us with joining us at one of our tour dates and come on stage and join us sometime, too.
Shall do.
Okay, word. Let's talk all about the book, because I think did you write this knowing that Mitt Romney was going to be the nominee and this was the most timely thing you could possibly do?
I knew that the vultures were going to try to pick our next president. I didn't realize that they would include one of their own flock, Mr. Romney. But Paul Singer, who is the Uber Vulture in Vulture's Picnic. You have to understand, I didn't give him the name Vulture, by the way. It was his bankers and maybe his mom. But you have to understand, when we're talking about, you know, we talk about Bain Capital, but no one's talking about where the money came for Romney's campaign. It just came out of the closet last night. The 527 account had a strip down and revealed that Paul Singer gave $1 million to Romney. But he also organized those other millionaires, including Koch. So where do these guys get their money? Where did Singer get his money? He's a vulture. He waits for things to die. And I've been, for BBC television, I've been investigating him and his fellow vultures for several years all around five continents. And that's part of the story of Vulture's Picnic. But, the way Singer made his first billion is literally, you know, like I say, waits for things to die. In this case, it was asbestos workers. Mm-hmm. The Owens Corning was an asbestos company that literally was killing its workers, withholding from them the information that their lungs were turning to mush. They were beginning to suffocate their workers, dying from asbestosis. Nice, huh?
Yeah.
So they went into bankruptcy, promised to pay all their profits to their workers as part of a deal. Paul Singer then buys the company out of bankruptcy for, like, you know, peanuts. I don't even think he, with the shells on. then he gets a buddy of his named George W. Bush through something called tort reform to shaft the workers out of the money that they were due. They ended up getting 20 cents on the dollar, the money that they were owed. Now, you have to understand, these guys are dying, okay?
Right.
So they had to write off and sign off. I read some of these stories about just these guys. You know, they're literally dying. They have to leave their family something. They're getting wiped out because they don't have health care, and the company didn't have the money to pay for it. So he literally took the money from these dying guys and made a billion, flipped the company because it didn't owe the guys any more money for $1 billion profit. That was his first. And then he moves on to Peru, where he lets the dictator Peru, the president of Peru, guy named Fujimori.
Alberto Fujimori.
If you remember him, he was wanted for murder, the president. They were going to arrest their own president.
Oh, yeah. I was in Peru when that was going on.
You know what? Singer helped him. He took the kind of Air Force One. Singer helped him escape in return for $58 million payment.
And this man is the number one GOP funder, Greg?
The number one GOP funder. It's pretty hard to tell because, you know, everyone's working through these strange 527s where you don't even have to say who you are. But he's pretty proud of his post organizing this business. He's the guy who was behind the so-called the Christie bump there. Singer, then he went on, so after he bled Peru, after he took the money from the dying asbestos workers, I just traced him down. I just came back from the Congo, where he was able to get a hold of, he paid about $10 million to get a hold of what a supposed debt owed by the Congo, which is the poorest nation on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now seizing their oil and everything else he can find, picking up $500 million from the poorest nation in the world. And what you have to understand about this, whose money is that? This nation owed billions of dollars to the United States Treasury. When Bono went and had his little, session with George Bush, Bush ran out and said, oh, we're going to eliminate all of the debts owed by the Congo. What Bush didn't say is that that would benefit, that the only beneficiary in the end was Paul Singer, his top donor. Oh. And that's, in other words, so we got out of the way, stepped out of the way, so the resource of the Congo could be seized by this guy. And just so you know, as of the day before yesterday, one more nation made his activities illegal. In most of the world, Paul Singer's activities, his vulture kind of debt collections on poor nations and poor companies, is the way his methods are illegal. So in other words, Singer, the big bucks behind Romney and the GOP, that's why no one takes a shot at him, because they know that, you know, Gingrich, if something happens and he falls into the nomination, is going to call on Singer too. They don't say anything because even though this guy, he's an outlaw, but in the United States, he's a job creator.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you, Greg, because I watch a lot of Fox News because I'm a thinker, and this is exactly. let me lay on you what the average Fox guy will say to everything you just shared with us. Yeah, Paul Singer did all this, fine, but it's not illegal. He's a free citizen in a free country. He's successful, and money is speech, and he's allowed to spend money to support the candidates he believes in. What's wrong with that? How do you respond to an argument like that? Because that's what you're going to get.
Okay, he's an international outlaw. Okay, that's number one. Okay, understand that this stuff is allowed only in the U.S. because he's bought himself protection all the way into the White House, right? That's very important to understand. What he does is illegal elsewhere. And this is causing us. I was just in the Congo. I was at a cholera quarantine clinic where money that was supposed to be coming to the Congo from a sale of cobalt for your little iPhone was going to clean the water supply in the Congo so kids would stop getting cholera. Instead, these vultures seized it, seized that money. I mean, people literally, the former Deputy Secretary of the United Nations told me, he said, you know, do these people understand that what they're doing, they're in the business of killing babies like that? I mean, that's the UN Deputy Secretary General, okay? I didn't hear that on Fox. I mean, I'm happy to have a debate with Mr. Singer. He's refused, you know, as soon as he hears it's Greg Palast, he's absolutely refused to speak to me. BBC has offered him all the airtime he wants. But instead, he gets a lot of op-eds. I've seen op-eds of his in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times pontificating. This is our great, you know, this is our Romney's great job creator.
Well, now, it seems like one of the best things we can do as patriots is make Paul Singer a household name and make sure our Republican friends and neighbors know who this guy is and what exactly he does and who's financing the Romney machine. But is your book Vulture's Picnic just about him, or is it about the other folks of his ilk?
The whole flock of vultures, you know, and then I go undercover, you know, because I use old-fashioned investigative reporting for BBC, which, you know, I understand is illegal under Patriot Act 3 in America. That's why we don't do investigative reports. I go undercover, I go stakeouts, I grab these guys. They, you know, you have to understand, they don't, the way that they get a hold of these is they pay bribes. I followed one, the president of Zambia took $3 million from one of Singer's cronies. $3 million. We follow him to Geneva. We're on his way to his bank. He went shopping just like you would, right? Except he spends $1 million cash buying 200 pairs of elevator shoes because he's kind of a short dictator and a diamond studded tie. But to get the evidence, we go in. My partner, Ms. Badpenny, that's really her name, went in. She speaks several languages. Went in speaking the local French and saying, "Listen, we're doing a to get permission to film in Switzerland. Is not so easy to get because of the Swiss banking laws." So we're doing a film, a TV show, lifestyle shopping with the rich and famous. Anyone rich and famous come in here? Oh yeah, the president of Zambia. We put that on air, his shopping spree with the vulture's money, and that's one of the things that helped make it illegal in England. It's illegal in Germany. It's illegal just about everywhere in the world. The way these guys seize these nations and basically seize our money from our treasury. But yeah, actually, most of the book is my investigation inside on the Deepwater Horizon explosion and on Fukushima. Mm-hmm. But it starts out with these vultures because they're all kinds of vultures, you know. I mean,
Deepwater Horizon that was like Halliburton versus BP. I didn't know who to root against.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, except that's the line that they're giving you. Remember mm-hmm. that BP said that the cement, they're shocked that the cement failed. Well, you know what? Just after it exploded, I get a cable from the Caspian Sea in Asia from a guy who's an eyewitness, an insider, scared to death. I fly off to the Caspian Sea to a nation called Azerbaijan. Don't worry about it. You'll find out when the 102nd, 101st Airborne gets there.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how we learn oil nation capitals. It's capital mm-hmm. Baku. Get in there, and what I find out, what the insider had told me, is that this had happened before, that BP isn't shocked about the cement failing and the thing blowing up, the cement that seals the pipe, because it happened exactly that way on a BP transocean rig, same crap cement that Halliburton formula, that blew out in the oil, the what I call the Islamic Republic of BP, Azerbaijan. It blew out there, and they covered it up. They mm-hmm. absolutely covered it up. And then BP guys went before Congress and said, we've never had any problems with this stuff. They lied yep. before Congress. They lied in their SEC forms. They covered it up by beatings, by bribery, babes, all the bees and beeps.
By a flood of TV commercials featuring all the happy people in the Gulf, yeah. which is better than it's ever been.
It is better than it's ever been.
Have you seen these commercials on all the news channels?
I went down there. I mean, this is the other thing is that, you know, like a National Petroleum Radio, they said it was all, that the oil was all eaten up by bugs, right? So I go down there. And I take a Zodiac boat out, and I jump into one of the offshore islands, and I jump right into, this is 150 miles away from the blowout. It's more than 6 months later, and I step into oil mats that are big as ponies.
Wow.
And there's still 600 miles of oil out there, but no one seems to want to even bother and look. And, you know, yeah, they say, yeah, go ahead and swim there.
Yeah,
that was my kid. You know, and it is still poison. So part of the investigation in Vulture's Picnic is to find out how they cover this up, and even the and by the way, our own State Department knew about the blowout in the Caspian Sea. They covered
yep.
that too.
They certainly
so
did.
So that's inside too. So you know, so I have that. I go to the Amazon. I go to the Arctic Circle. Whatever it takes to find out what these characters are up to. So
you're a hero of mine. You're a hero to all fans of real journalism, and you make me proud to be an American. Greg Pallas is investigative reporter for the BBC, and his new book is Vulture's Picnic, which you should own, and you should also own. The best democracy money can buy. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
What is Japanese for snap, crackle, and pop again?
Oh, yeah, right. That was their generators. Yeah.
Right.
You'll have fun with that chapter.
Yeah.
Okay, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Mr. Pallast.
Thanks,
and
Greg.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be back with our final minutes and try to squeeze in a few more calls right after this.
Wow, I don't believe it. This is too good to be real.
Of course this is real.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. That Sheryl Crow song is, I think this year, 18 years old.
Yep.
That's
oh, my
right.
God. Stop.
Yep.
Would you stop that?
Great song, man. Great. I mean, it
and
sounds
now,
like they just
back to the countdown.
Stuck in the middle with you and just made it sexy, but it's a terrific, terrific song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph. And, you know, here in the final minutes of the show, we've learned a lot today. We've talked about BP.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Singer and Vulture Capitalist. Mm-hmm. We talked about Paul McCartney's exquisite new jazz album and Mitt Romney thinking the poor have had it pretty easy for a long time.
Yep.
But one thing we haven't gotten to yet is the controversy this week that over the Susan G. Komen Foundation with Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who know, I hope Stephanie wants to talk about it tomorrow because we won't get to all your calls today, and I know it's going to yield a lot. But, of course, Susan G. Komen of the famous Pink Ribbon for Breast Cancer mm-hmm. Awareness halts grants to Planned Parenthood.
Yep.
Now, according to Planned Parenthood on an article in NPR, its centers performed more than 4 million breast exams over the past 5 years, including nearly 170,000 breast exams as a result of Komen grants. A lot of people say Planned Parenthood doesn't do exams. Planned Parenthood has said that they have been able to help fund over 170,000, which means 170,000 breast exams for cancer will not take place because Komen cares so much about life. Now, this is caving into pressure, and I have no problem with anybody in America who's opposed to abortion rights and wants to do whatever they can to protect the unborn. It's America. It's a free country.
That's fine.
Jesus never mentioned it. He was against the death penalty, but he never mentioned abortion. But if that's where you want to direct your energy, God bless. You're allowed. However, we're talking about women's health here, and it's always women's health that's thrown first under the bus. And Planned Parenthood has been so pilloried and so scorned and vilified in the right-wing media and by right-wing politicians. It's worth pointing out that the Republican Party controlled the White House, the House, and the Senate.
Yep.
From the time George Bush took office until the beginning of 2007. 6 years, they could have defunded Planned Parenthood. They didn't do it.
That's
why? Because they don't really care about abortion.
They only care about fundraising.
They care about fundraising. Thank you, Chris. And all y'all who live in the South or have family who live in the South or in the Bible Belt, y'all seen these mailings that you get or that my parents always get as churchgoers, and it's all about abortion, and it's all about send your checks to this address. And good conservative folks have been sending in their abortion checks for years and years and years, and the GOP is never going to change it. George Bush Sr. favored abortion rights until the day Ronald Reagan asked him to be his running mate. George Bush Jr. never once appeared at a Right to Life convention. He would only send them audio taped greetings, never even a video, just an audio so he couldn't be seen with them. The Republican Party plays the pro-life community for fools. They shake them down for money. They rack it up. Why pro-lifers don't defect and join the Right to Life Party is beyond me. And we're now seeing the latest example of this through political pressure against the Susan G. Komen Foundation. This is going to do, and again, Planned Parenthood, in spite of what some lying congresspeople will tell you that 90% of what they do is abortion, no. I don't have the exact stats in front of me. We will tomorrow, Chris.
Yeah.
But it's a tiny percentage of what they do. They do counseling. They do mammograms. They give birth control advice. They give sexual wellness advice, treat STDs. They take care of women. And now 170,000 breast exams, according to Planned Parenthood, won't go down because Komen claims to care about life.
Yep.
It's very, very sad. And, guys, what do you take on this?
I'm extremely angry. What it seems like, because, you know, I used to work in right-wing radio when I lived in Phoenix. And our station there was involved in the Komen Race for the Cure. And we were like, oh, okay, great. This is something great that our station can be involved with. Wow, did we hear about it from our far-right base.
Sure.
They were wondering, how could we be involved with an organization that was involved and gives money to Planned Parenthood?
Wow.
So that's kind of when I got an inkling as to what the right thought of the Komen Foundation. And now, and they have been gunning for the Komen Foundation for a long time now. I think the right has infiltrated the Komen Foundation on purpose, and this is the final result, the final goal of what they're trying to accomplish with
Komen. I don't think this is the final goal or the final result. I think this is just the latest step in a very interesting saga.
Right, but this is a huge, huge win for the far right.
Yeah, and it's actually a huge loss for the Susan G. Komen Foundation,
yes,
because what you're going to see happening now is, believe it or not, America, mostly a pro-abortion rights society. I try not to use the words pro-life or pro-choice if I can, because I think that they're made to divide us and, you know.
Right.
Again, we talked about abortion earlier. I think it's possible to believe both sides are right and both sides are wrong. Yeah, abortion takes a human life, and yeah, it's none of your damn business. It's between a woman and her doctor and God.
Yep.
And again, you
and,
know.
And as of right now, it is a legal medical procedure.
It is legal, and if you really, really care about abortion, I said this in the first hour, I'm going to say it again now, and I'm talking to you, Gingrich, because I know you listen. Abortion's not the problem. Abortion's the symptom. Unwanted pregnancy is the problem.
That's what Planned Parenthood is all about.
Right, Jim. When we get serious about the unwanted pregnancy problem, the abortion symptom will reduce and get smaller. As Bill Clinton said, abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. We have it in our hands. We have conservatives and liberals can come together. Americans generally favor abortion rights and overwhelmingly favor contraception. That's what Planned Parenthood does. Mm-hmm. When we can build coalitions, and by the way, I'm now tweeting on my Twitter from PolitiFacts facts about this and the stats on how many. It's only 3% abortion-related funds.
Yeah, someone sent me 2%. Someone sent me 2%. So it's around there. Yep.
Which is our way of saying follow us on Twitter, everybody.
Exactly.
I'm John Fugel saying. Jim, what's your Twitter handle?
I have no idea.
Well, you have you're Voice Deity Jim.
Oh, okay.
Voice Deity Jim.
And
I follow Friday, you man. I promote you. I pimp you, man.
And I'm Radio Guy Chris on Twitter.
And, of course, SM Show, yeah. Which sounds like something very different. But
SM Radio was taken. So we
And you should follow Sexy Liberal while you're at it as well, because we're going to be talking about this very issue this weekend at the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, our first night in Philly at the Kimmel Center. It's this Saturday.
Yep.
If you care about America, if you care about women, if you care about comedy, you will come. Get on a plane now. I'm John Fiegel saying God bless. Thank you, Chris and Jim. We'll see you tomorrow.